All right, so here we are once again. This is Tools for the Times. My name is Mark Stanton Welch. It is the 5th of May, Cinco de Mayo. A day of celebration and independence and freedom, and a day to begin to really look into this beautiful, beautiful part of ourselves that for too long has been neglected in one way or another and relegated to a shell of him or herself. So tonight's topic is really going to be about freeing up that part of ourselves to create a very, very potent and powerful relationship that continues to give and to bless. Sorry, I just got a call from someone here that can't get on the call. So I'm going to try and talk as well as get this message over to them. They're in the waiting room, they said. Sorry about this. Let me do this. Use the code. Okay. So I completely lost my place, which is perfect for inner child work, because it's a fleeting and moving energy that flits about and really pays attention to the power of the moment. We're going to find this out. So tonight's topic, creating relationship with your inner child, it's a pivotal topic because it can change everything in the way life shows up for you. So I'm hoping you'll feel that way after I've given the information and shared with you some opportunities for some exercises. I did invite you, if you got the paper that I sent out, the email earlier today that invited you to gather some picture evidence that you were a child at one point. In other words, if you have any pictures of you as a child, to have them present, because they do rekindle awareness and help to move energies and to bring back that connection and open the door to it. And if you don't, you have your memory and your experiences. And also to have either a notebook or some paper and some writing utensils, pens, crayons, anything that you want, because it's my intention to have a few activities and opportunities for us to actually begin the work on creating this relationship. So first of all, I asked the question, what is the inner child? And then I have these topics, some perspectives on the inner child, inner child elements, parental elements, process of reparenting, two in relationship, the inner child and the physical self, that elusive happy childhood, tools that make a difference, and resources for inner child exploration, as well as a message from Mark's inner child, who likes to call himself Mark Alark. So let me get, and he wants that to be first, but I'm going to sort of hold off for a moment here and just get into this, what is an inner child? Okay, having already established the multidimensionality of existence in the cosmos, we begin to explore a critical element of the dimensional awareness, the inner child. Child self has been around for as long as humans have peppered the planet. Look at fairy tales and the way the innocent one succeeds or overcomes the challenges, how the struggle of good and evil must be overcome, how journeys and adventures are taken, how little ones can communicate with the fairies, the animals, the imaginary beings. We are all aware that there is a part of us that feels vulnerable, a part that is filled with joy, a part that loves to play, a part that creates, a part that wants to be loved, a part that pushes the world away at times, and a part that feels lost and lonely, a part that feels overwhelmed and out of control. So hello, little precious one. I'm talking to you. So let's start seeing how we can educate and clarify and assist in releasing those wounds and misperceptions to nurture and protect and enjoy, and finally, create the doorway for that elusive happy childhood. I'm in. So I dug up some lyrics to songs that haven't been recorded, songs I wrote through the years that were devoted to this little one or the experiences that began to shape him. And in 1987, or actually it may have been 85, this was a song I was doing because then I was doing some actual work as a school teacher, and I was doing work around kids a whole lot, and there were opportunities for me to write music that was supporting a growing understanding and awareness and understanding of the child, the inner child, as opposed to the children who were outside of me. So I said, life is good as a child. Celebrate the day that's just begun. Running free, running wild, all is sweet as a child. Time stands still as a child. Anywhere is just a breath away. Look, that butterfly just smiled. A day's a year as a child. As a child, I was so bold. As a child, I never thought of growing old. I lived to learn the mysteries. I could talk to the trees. Endless wonder as a child. Uncomplicated is the child. So unconcerned about the day today. Every step is so worthwhile. Those simple days as a child. I'm trying to live life as a child. Rolling with the tide that wants to carry me away. Still making progress all the while. I'm going back to find the child. As a child, I was so bold. As a child, I never thought of growing old. I lived to learn the mysteries. I could talk to the trees. Endless wonder as a child. La da 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 da. So the picture I paint is a familiar one in that song. It's one that we recognize from the incarnation itself of how we showed up in this planet, already impacted by the vibrations of entering, by the vibration of the parental units, as I love to call them, by the environment that we were born into, the history of that environment, et cetera, all energetic impacts upon this precious, fully aware being that came in. And we all remember that, and that really is where we're headed back to. The beauty of these times is that it's opening up a door to give us the opportunity to reconnect with the true and holy essence of ourselves that is represented as the inner child, as the soul itself, as the higher self in many different names. Multidimensional elements of ourselves that are capable of being fully present at the same time are what these parts are. It's really exciting to have spent the time working on this because I honestly haven't done some inner child work like this in terms of coming from a teaching point of it for a while. So I was able to rediscover some elements and also expand on the new perspectives that I have been getting and incorporating into my work. So I'm very excited about this. So I'm going to open up here with some perspectives on the inner child. Though formal work regarding the inner child began in the late 60s, the presence of this precious one has been in and out of humanity since its first arrival here in the prehistoric times that recorded history refuses to acknowledge. Even Christ said, "Lest you become like a little child, you shall not enter the King of Heaven." So hopefully tonight we'll give some understanding of what a phrase like that would mean and how we can begin to reclaim that capacity to be in the frequency of our full design. So before we even go any further, I'm getting called to remind us of the power of speaking our true birth name. In speaking that name, we bring forth and we call forth that child part of us, the original divine template that has traveled with us through infinity and beyond, as they say. And when I speak that name, I put myself in the cocoon of safety that keeps my frequency intact on the inside. And it calls guides, teachers, angelic energies to surround me and be present for my beck and call. In other words, to help assist me in clearing anything actually tonight that is ready to move More on that later. So we're going to go ahead and speak our true name, our first, our middle, our last, that was on the birth certificate when we arrived, a carefully arranged and chosen name that has a frequency that is essential to this incarnation for each of us. So on the count of three, let's speak it. One, two, three. Mark Stanton Welch. 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 Welch. Mark Stanton Welch. Mark Stanton
McCaffrey.
So it is. So I'm going to ask you on the count of three to actually speak your name out loud, because one of you at least has your mute isn't on yet. So one, two, three. Oh, I guess the mute went on. Okay. And that's not that your voice isn't magnificent and beautiful. It was just they're all in different times, and so it starts to get confusing and reminded me of some nights when I was in my 20s. All right, so it's curious how the infant enters this incarnation, completely aware of who she is as an infinite expression of the Christ essence, vibrating uniquely as I am, but supremely vulnerable, dependent, and relatively helpless to move about in his physical vehicle. Now, let me give you a little framework here. I'm interchanging the pronouns his and hers because of the fact that we have both males and females on this call, and in fact, owing to, in some ways, the androgynous history that we all carry. So in the same sentences, you'll hear reference to him or his or her and hers. So I just want you to be aware of that. So it's really just referring to the specific inner child within you. It's as if it was a setup for challenge and an adventure unlike any other in the cosmos. The energy is raw and flowing, oscillating in the now moment in direct response to the events and the influences of the environment. The infant is primarily still a spiritual being with a profound awareness that cannot be spoken. Silenced, if you will, by the choice to return to the third dimension and walk the walk of remembering and reclaiming full awareness in the flesh. This is a critical awareness to have about our beginning, because from the very inception, from the very point that conception was made, the awareness began and the energy began impacting the energetic vehicle that is you and me. And so in a sense, everything has relevance, not to the point that it's bad, because in this realm, nothing is necessarily good or bad. It's just greater opportunities for awareness. So investing ourselves in choosing to incarnate into this dimension, we came in with full awareness of the potential of what could occur. And it was exciting enough for us to sign on the dotted line and say, yes, I will go. The rules of the game are that we forget from whence we came in a fairly short time, within 7 years at the max. And during that time, we begin the journey and are set with certain tools and awarenesses that will allow us to take a journey back home to a place of full awareness of who we are, what we're capable of, and from whence we came. Up till this particular time and this period of shifting between Piscean and Aquarian times, this reawakening and awareness may have taken lifetime after lifetime to fulfill itself. This is one of the very first incarnations where we're actually able to get a glimpse of who we are, and not only get the glimpse, but actually begin to, and who knows, maybe access the capacity to have full awareness while still in the physical form of who we are, and thus live in this dimension in the way that I believe it was originally designed to be lived in, with the fullness that is beginning to reveal itself. This is an incredibly important and relevant time, and I applaud each of you for choosing to be here, because not everybody has. Okay, moving on. The child has always been the bearer of change, bringing joy, chaos, challenge to the parents, shifting awareness and focus and purpose, re-stimulating the parents' own unprocessed childhood memories, and in some ways it seems like a doomed prospect. but honestly, having taken that journey countless times, I, and I know you do, realize now that nothing could be more perfect, more revealing, more rewarding than this winding way that has been laid out in this dimension to rediscover who we are. So everything that's occurred in the outer child impacts the inner child, especially in the years of pre-birth to seven. At seven, the body becomes fully incarnated in the physical. As the veil of awareness slides over the child's conscious self, and though this is actually changing in these remarkable times, in the transition to Aquarian times, the children coming in now are not forgetting from whence they came, which is becoming one of the great challenges of the new generations to be embraced and accepted with their new capacities. It's a very, very potent and powerful time that is creating some very significant changes. The maternal and familial influences are strong as they see the energetic being with energy, emotion, patterns, ideas, beliefs, etc., and all this aligns to create a frequency filled with energetic memory that does her best to follow his personal intention for incarnation. I hope you're understanding what I'm saying here is at the point of incarnation, you and I had an intention. We have certain things that we came here for and certain things we wanted to get clear and work through beyond our own opportunity to remember who we are while we were here. Now, the rules of the game are that when we incarnate, we begin to take on some of the energies of those around us, the parental units, the family that we were born into, the environment that we were in, and those begin immediately to influence how things show up for us and how we are being equipped to respond. In other words, it's creating the groundwork for future personal work, as we used to say. The maternal and the familial influences are strong as they see the energetic being with energy, motion, patterns, ideas, and beliefs. And all this aligns to create a frequency filled with energetic memory that does her best to follow his personal intention. Okay, I read that, and I wanted to underscore it. The big plan is so much larger than that, however. Multiple levels are simultaneously in action. The child's intended purpose, the past life tendrils, the karmic infiltration and debts, the growing and evolving relationships with the family and other significant players, the current shifting natural environment, the cultural influences of the community, society, country, and the world that the little one incarnates into, and even the greater celestial influences impacting all of humanity are swirling around and through this precious being, seeking attention and focus and decisive action. Whew, what a load! And we thought we were just incarnating into this little earth plane to have a blissful experience. And for some, that's exactly what it's been. For predominantly, though, for most people, It's been quite the journey. So you see, what I'm doing here is laying some perspectives that fed into what this inner child became in the very early days of the incarnation. Because once the decisions were made about survival, and I'll re-underscore this in a few moments, once the decisions are made about survival, certain behaviors and patterns and thinking and beliefs, and thus attractions start to happen, and they simply reinforce decisions that are made. And here's a disclaimer, until further notice, which is the re-education of the inner child self, which is really what we're talking about tonight. Whew. The inner child holds a divine template of the I am that I am, expressing as me, as you. She is the very essence that has transcended countless incarnations, past and future. He has been called the soul essence, and she lives in the heart, dwelling expectedly in an expansive place of wonder. The strong influence of these times is to bring us to a new and expansive heart awareness. The heart awareness is a very potent place. If you've studied anything about what's called heart math, where the power of the nerve ganglia that are in the heart itself, the nerve center, as well as in the solar plexus and also in the brain, the heart is the most potent of them all. It's the most influential. It has the widest field of energy that emanates from it. And in these times, it is being amplified as the center of our being. And I've established over several calls this point called the sino-atrial point, which shamans say is the portal between worlds, between dimensions. It is also the seat of the soul. It is where our higher awareness lives, in a sense. It's the point at which the movement back and forth can take place in a very fluid manner. That, when combined with the pituitary gland and all of the chakras front and back, we have this remarkable capacity to allow ourselves to move in awareness, in idea, in understanding, between dimensions. This is really all established at the point of incarnation. The tools are in place. It's just a matter now of the incarnate reaccessing those tools so they can be applied to the moments of living. So it's important to know what the template is that we are, because that's what we're going back to in these times, in my opinion, and also honestly in my experience. The inner child's language is emotion and the physical body. She communicates through sensation and feeling. By design, emotion is a raw force entering through the back of the second chakra. It feeds the organic response to the moments of living. The emotion rises and falls as it moves through the flow out of the being. The physical design of the human is to be self-cleaning. Through the incessant circle of the uninterrupted breath, the energies elicited by experience are processed and released. That is important to remember as our design. It may have been for me 61 3/4 years since I was in that place, but I have the energetic and the cellular memory of my design within me always. And this is what this information is doing. You subscribing to this process of tools for the times is a conscious choice to reawaken and to trigger these awareness points within you that then feed you and seed you with the information that is particularly relevant to you and will be utilized by you in the way that your own higher self chooses to do so, in conjunction with your child self and your adult self, elements that we're going to be looking at a little more deeply. Parental injunctions, interventions, behaviors, words, emotional interference with the child's natural, emotion interfere with the child's natural cleansing process. The impact is that the perfect system is interrupted, which begins the storing of the unsaid and the raw intensity of the emotion unfelt. It stores primarily in the chakras and tissue and cells and all the energetic bodies. And continued storing through repetitive action creates dis-ease. The child's role is to survive. So, given the circumstances, she makes quick decisions about how to do that. Decisions often uninformed and lacking the big picture. These decisions soon become the very patterns, thoughts, and subconscious beliefs that determine how we show up in the world. They stay until they are cleared by re-education, energetic release, dis-ease, shock, etc. Okay, so you've got the foundation, you've got what impacted it, you've got the result of the impact. These are all necessary for the awareness of the big picture of what's going on. It is important to know that your inner child's role is simply to survive. Her intention and her desire is to be cared for and to be able to be a child. Most often, that is taken away at an early age with the way culture is. Specific examples, they fill up all of our lives of where our opportunity to be an innocent, receptive, expanding, filled with wonder and imagination child was taken away by demands of time, steering towards a particular way of being within the framework of the household, all of those elements. On a personal level, in a sense, I became my mother's husband at a very, very young age. We're talking energetically here, and we're talking in the kinds of responsibilities that were laid upon me. Not that I'm sitting here chastising those or blaming anything. It is what is, and it is what was. And I understand in the big picture what it was about. The cost of it was really unaware of me to me at the time. The impact, however, wasn't. More on that. The inner child has been a metaphorical character in countless stories and fairy tales over the evolution of humans. The triumph over evil is a child's journey. The rediscovery of talents, skills, and capabilities is the inner child's story. The finding the pot of the gold is the little one's story. Finding love, acceptance, and happily ever after is the inner child's story and wish. Connecting with the seen and the unseen world is the child's story. Coming home to loving arms is the child's story. These are archetypal energies that have been placed through us through the telling of stories, through the use of fairy tales, through traditions that influence us on a very deep level. There are certain yearnings that occur, and these yearnings are essential to keep us wanting to come back to that place again. They are not put there for interference or to distract us. They keep the fire alive. They keep the window, the light in the window, so that we know where to go home to. Not necessarily how, but we have the yearning. So this whole inner child movement in terms of its formal self started in the 60s. A fellow named Eric Byrne, he was a therapist, and he came up with a process called transactional analysis. And he started to categorize these elements within us, and basically the parent, the adult, and the child. And the idea was that these elements that also had subsets, and I'll talk about those a little bit later, they would interact with one another, sometimes in very nurturing ways and sometimes in ways that created nothing but conflict. It seems that TA, as it was called back then, was focusing most on the dysfunctionality of things. Let me see what else I can do. I'm just going to paraphrase some of this stuff because it can be read by you when you get the copy in the next 2 days. So living in a tug-of-war between the parent and the adult, the child often struggled to find safety and meaning. And this work laid the foundation for a growing awareness of the importance of self-esteem. And books like I'm Okay, You're Okay, and Marlo Thomas's Free to Be You and Me, these things began to infiltrate the 70s. In terms of the idea that that was an opportunity for us to reconnect with our understanding and appreciation of self. Nowhere was there really a lot of talk about an inner child at that point. Unfortunately, the structure of the model was not organic, but rather a stilted and tedious process of identifying who was in the moment, which part was influencing what, and who was engaged in the drama triangle. This is where a lot of the psychobabble came from. Where I would say, well, you know, my critical parent is talking to you from this energy, and I recognize that my nurturing parent wants to come from this frequency, but my adult keeps getting in the way of the angry child. So, you know, everybody's snoozing by then. There's no communication going on. So that method soon it didn't take long, but it was replaced in the 80s by the recovery movement. And the recovery movement took a turn from just a traditional AA and the 12 steps and went into the work done by a fellow named John Bradshaw. And it was all geared towards bringing the child self home. The idea of the inner child was foundational in the work that he was doing, and that this was just part of ourselves that was so wounded that the addictions that were taken on were really just expressions of that yearning and that woundedness and the desire for that child to just be loved. Beautiful and foundational, and yet it too was caught in a rhetoric and a form that was hard to completely subscribe to. The notion of codependency came out in that, and the codependency thing became such a buzzword that it was hard to tell when I was just taking care of myself or whether I was actually caring for someone or whether it was codependent. And again, the stiltedness and the awkwardness of those times, as challenging as it was, and it was as much as it was able, it was kind of caused us all to throw our hands up, those who were invested in it. It was actually laying a powerful foundation, because by the end of the 80s, the formal New Age movement took a stronger hold in a larger part of culture. And this started in 1987 with the harmonic convergence as one of the most important and early events. Energies were starting to shift, and people began to toss about these ideas of affirmation and started attending countless workshops to get a glimpse of feeling in body. However, the cost of those self-help movements has been to perpetuate the cultural tenet that we are all flawed and filled with limitation, seduced into thinking that the next book, the next process, the next guru, the next workshop, the next retreat, the next course would finally bring me the thing I needed to feel better about who I am. The cure had challenges to it, and in some ways it was worse than the actual dis-ease itself, because it kept robbing us from our own capacity to turn inward in a way that was respectful and honorable. And still through all of this, the child waited. And unfortunately, during this time, art therapist Lucia Cappuccioni, who is my current landlady, discovered that the inner child could be communicated with in a two-way manner. And she pioneered a process of non-dominant handwriting, and that opened up direct communication with the inner child, because you know, as before, the child had emotion and the child had body sensation to get in touch with us and express his or her challenges or needs. And as I'll bring up a little bit later, most of those weren't attended to, because that was the programming that was going on. Okay, so to bring this long journey, you know, into the present time, the work of Lucia and the capacity to actually make connection with the child self. Okay, I'm a little out of line here. I apologize, because there's so many things dropping in and so much information that was brought to the printed word here that I wanted to share today. So let me just quickly weed through it. Okay, so finally the little one had a voice, and boy, did she use it. At last, the held on to feelings, the unexpressed words, the abuses, the longings could be released. And what a glorious time it was for journals and drawings and notebooks of cleansing and nurturing dialogue filled the coffee tables of the brave ones who were willing to take such an absurd journey. So with the support of the cosmos itself, the masses who would listen were beginning to experience a shift that started in the late 80s. And this budding reawakening to their greater self, and channels everywhere, especially up and down the California coast. I used to listen to one called Mafu. Mafu traveled from Santa Barbara to Santa Cruz and held meetings on a regular basis, so we would tune into the latest channelings. And the channels were bringing in information hot off the presses of the cosmos, and they were bringing in these you know, life-changing perspectives on the expansion of who we really were, and they were running straight into the prejudices and the fear elements that were trying to hold the old forms in place. What a rich time it was. And all the while, the inner child is slowly starting to feel like he or she is going to be noticed, finally. And out of the new thought movement, the information came in from the East, and we started getting the first glimpses of a body beyond the physical, with energy systems, which included the chakras. And then out of the truth, the puzzle began to get put together, and a new medical model started to show up, embracing the impact of held emotion, unexpressed pain, damaged self-esteem, personal abuse upon the precious human being. It looked like there was finally a light at the end of the tunnel. And then it brought me personally, because everything I've talked about here, I participated in. And I was invested in each of these elements in a very deep level for a period of time. So it was as if it was necessary for me to walk through all of them. My devotion to reclaiming self-esteem took me into a profound and organic process, really in the last 2 years, called somatic experience. And it was born out of the work of a therapist named Peter Levine. And it's impacting the world scale, the wide-scale work of PTSD, which is post-traumatic stress syndrome. Now, PTSD is typically being approached, is being used with people who have had obvious disorder, you know, traumatic experiences, like people who have been in war, soldiers, those who have been in accidents, those who have witnessed atrocities, et cetera, et cetera. The truth that's coming out of this PTSD exploration and application is that it goes way far beyond what was thought to be just those elements of the PTSD. I would say 99.9% of the world, in terms of the human population, has had traumatic experiences that viscerally impact the physical system. And the work that's being done with somatic experience to go in and to draw out that visceral energy and to allow it to process and release and bring completion is profound. Peter Levine's work was based upon the witnessing of animals in the wild. And when an animal, let's say it was being chased, it became the prey, the animal would run. And they would run as fast as they possibly could, and sometimes it was enough. Sometimes it wasn't. When the perpetrator would overtake the animal, the prey, more often than not, the animal would just fall and play dead. More often than not, the one who was doing the hunting lost interest in this still being right there and wandered off to find something a little more exciting. What they began to notice through film studies and actual witnessing is that at some point, the animal that was lying there starts to move in what appears to be random movements. What's really happening is the nervous system is being turned on again, because for all intents and purposes, they had shut down and played dead. The nervous system started again. The movements, if they were slowed down, you began to see that the animal was continuing to run. And these were actually choreographed movements that allowed the animal to reach the perceived place of safety, in which time their nervous system came back on and went, all right, well, that was fun. Now, where can I find something to eat? So by witnessing this process, Peter Levine began to notice that humans would go through the same process, and yet the medical community was trained, and those around who are trying to help want to stop the person from having just too much reaction. They want to slow all that down. When the person starts to cry or their body starts to shake, they think they're in shock. Now, I'm not saying that it is or it isn't, but based upon my experience of this, when I watched and participated with my body flailing all over the place and the release of the energies that I had held on to for probably 55 years, I am a firm believer in what this man is talking about. And the reason I bring this up is because to access the inner child and to befriend him or her, which means to create a place of safety and a place of trust with a child who mistrusted from the days when the wounds were put into place. The debris has to be cleared and moved first.
Oh.
And in so doing that, it creates the opening for the child to be willing then to take action. In other words, to start trust and then allow himself or herself to be reeducated by this beautiful adult. Okay, finally, in this one topic, and I knew this was going to be a long one because it's tracing the entire experience of where inner child started and where it actually became, instead of just a few households that were talking about it or a few people, to a larger and almost mass movement. The new process has created increasing clarity that, when aligned with the influx of frequencies in these times, reveals a new paradigm of reawakening the inner child, divine template, I am that I am, expressing as me, to wholeness. It's no longer a process of seeking a path to awareness. It is rather reawakening the inner template to reveal what we have always been. With the inner child at the heart of things, we are being increasingly reminded of the skills, talents, capabilities, design that we have inherently contained within us. Our moments of living are frequency-based experiences that hone our particular vibration. These frequencies serve to open up caches or caches of wisdom and understanding aligned to our design. This empowerment of the whole self changes the demands upon the inner child to be in charge, giving him the blessings to finally have her happy childhood, overseen by the competency of the adult nurturing parent higher self. This is a model that fits a new vibration and gets us off the treadmill of buying into limitations and separation. Now, I imagine that that was a whole lot to listen to, and because it was a little, you know, maybe deep or whatever, you didn't hear it, but it's written there. And the last paragraph in that first one pretty much spells out the process of these times to the recovery of who we are. So suffice it to say that everything else that is shared tonight and everything that we do is really going to be about activating these parts of us. There's a bit of information to help you with your awareness. The inner child elements are essentially the whole inner child, which is the infinite soul that transcends forms and lifetimes. The template self carries a particular frequency that permeates the current lifetime with the specific wisdom of the unique expression of the Christ essence. And this is in alignment with the energetic overseer or the higher self who regulates and orchestrates the moments of living. Okay, so we have the overseer's part of ourselves, which is when we speak our name, this is what we call back. We call back the template. And the wisdom that was contained in that being and expressible, though the vehicle wasn't useful as an expressive tool, is the very thing we're talking about. The inner child elements are the whole child, which we just said, the vulnerable child, the magical child, the playful child, and for now, the angry child. So the intent of creating relationship is to use the adult self, who has all the information and the experience to handle everything that is not the child's work, and the nurturing parent who has the capacity to consistently tend to the basic needs of the child self, to provide everything that's necessary to allow the child to be a child. And when that happens and the child surrenders control, the patterns fall to the side. Our beliefs shift. The subconscious mind no longer holds to the idea of limitation. It opens up the panorama of possibility in this particular dimension. I tell you, it is pretty significant. So what we're doing here is naming certain elements that, right, honestly, in some ways are strictly conventions, but they also do have purpose. And I'm inviting you to see in the beginning, okay, let me just say this. With all this information coming in, really what it comes down to is you consciously choosing through the adult self, it's called. The adult self is the one who has the information, the facts, the stability, the capacity to make decisions, to offer information, to take care of details and all of that, and oversees this child self who basically is just about living and playing. The adult self is going to take the responsibility away from the child for so many things that weren't his or hers to begin with. The very things that made, where the child made survival decisions to create patterns that we've had most of our life that ultimately do not serve us. And they are based on the idea of us being limited beings. The jig is up, and these new awarenesses are causing those things to fall apart. And the struggle is mighty. Within each of us, quite possibly, we're having this deep inner struggle of what we believed and thought who we were and seeing it start to crumble and fall apart. Even the abused child seeks out the abuser. The elements of us that don't work are still buddies by familiarity. And yet they do not serve the truth of our being anymore. It's a poignant time of awareness and release, and then the opportunity to really begin to embrace this part of ourselves, this beautiful child part of ourselves, and feed and nurture him or her to the point that she feels safe enough for us to then to be living fully. It's a design that is being laid upon us. It's coming from within. It's coming from without. Okay, the vulnerable child part is that the part that's experienced life's difficulties, the abuses, the woundings, the shutdowns, the ignorings, the put-downs, And she carries a reservoir of unprocessed fear, unexpressed words, limiting beliefs, feelings of hopelessness and depression, grief, sadness, all these so-called negative emotions or the lower frequency emotions, as well as these inner judgments and criticisms. And these energies and memories usually gather at the level of the second chakra. The intention is to liberate the child, to free up creativity, joy, imagination, wonder, elements that have been diminished by the smokescreen of misinformation, manipulation, control, and lack of care. Isn't it interesting that the very place, it's like nature, poison ivy or poison oak is there, and, you know, 10 feet down the trail, there's the antidote to rub on the poison oak. Here's the situation. Here's the solution. They're right there if we open up and pay attention. So here you've got a second chakra that will hold the frequencies of the woundings and categorize them and keep them tidy until time comes to release them. And you've also got the absolute pizzazz and the passion and the sensuality and joy and creativity of living in the same framework at the same frequency. What a curious design, but what a perfect design. You've got the magical child part that's a creative and joyful one. She has the access to the multidimensional experience of living here on Earth. He knows and interacts with the many kingdoms and has deep connection to the Earth Mother Gaia. She is joyful and imaginative, unfettered and filled with the ever-serving sense of wonder. And the intention here is to use a nurturing parent to meet her needs to keep him thriving in the juicy fun life. So here's what I'm saying. As we begin to address this part of ourselves, this inner child, we recognize there are certain elements of him or her. That there's a part of her who is definitely vulnerable and wounded. There is a part of her that is definitely magical. There is a part of her that is angry, and I'll talk about that just in a second, and there's a part of her that is very playful. And all of those are legitimate and useful and want to be addressed and honored and blessed and cleared and given permission to come back to what I said here, which is to live in that frequency of wholeness as a child. The angry child carries a dense energy of the pent-up, controlled, inappropriate rage. The personal injustices and lack of support and those who were supposed to be there feed the reservoir of lower frequency anger, self-criticism, personal judgment of others, bitterness, hatred, immobility, lack of decisiveness in action, feeling powerless or overpowering through bullying, controlling, or filibustering the moment. The energy is visceral and quick to express and explode. The intention here is to diminish the reservoir through the release of the energy, information, and strategies to limit the tendency to hold on to these feelings. Anger is an offshoot of the frustrations of living in this dimension in the form that it is. It is a force that, when held on to, can destroy. When held to the point that it explodes, can destroy. Thus, crimes of passion. Anger is one of the natural emotions that is part of the soup of this dimension. Anger, fear, grief, sorrow, joy, sadness, those are primary elements which attract beings from all over the cosmos to want to incarnate here like you and I, to feel, to experience the sensation of having this energy move through us, for the sheer adventure of that sensation. And too often what happens is people are taught to be afraid of, to ignore, and to deny emotion. This is the great paradox. And the way to free that is to begin to create relationship with this beautiful child self so that the moving energies can be supported from the feeling level with the child as well as the parental or the adult level where there's an understanding of what's going on in this process. And finally, the playful child is just that, playful and happy. The moments of living are adventurous, filled with delight, inviting, spontaneous, frivolous, satisfying, and expansive. A child must play, whether in the flesh or not. Bringing back the unabashed fun in life is the goal behind tending this child part of us. Herein lies the happy childhood that too many yearn for. So it is our opportunity to heal these wounds of our child selves, which will free us from the destructive, limiting patterns that have ruled our lives. The child self is very adept at taking a stand and building the walls and protecting the decision to survive. The re-education through developing trust and consistent attention are the primary ways to invite the child self to surrender control and accept support. So I asked you to have a piece of paper in front of you. And if you don't, you can just do this as a mental exercise. There's a part of you that is considered the, like it said, the vulnerable child, the playful child, the magical child, and the angry child. Each of these deserves recognition, and each of these deserves to have a voice. Whenever you meet somebody, it's usually important after you've had a greeting to find out who their name is, because it personalizes the experience. So I'm going to ask you in a moment to go ahead and access a name from each of these four elements of the child self. Because this will be a vehicle that you can use and a tool to create introduction that you can use when in a few moments we learn about the non-dominant handwriting methods. My little boy, in fact, that caused me to come right up to the end, he wanted to say a message, and he likes to talk. So he made this message, and he wanted me to read it to you. This is an example of how the inner child dialogue, in this case monologue, works, because this was not interactive. This was pretty much stream of consciousness. Knowing what we were going into, this is what he said. My name is Mark Olark. I was named after my guardian angel who was with me till I was 4 when I sat down at dinner and his plate wasn't there anymore. I asked where it was and my mom said he isn't coming back. It's time to grow up. I was sad. I still miss him, but he visits now and then, but I won't tell my mom even though she died. That wasn't so hard. She wasn't really there much anyway. I learned to get on my own really early. I kind of liked the incubator, but it was lonesome. Mark Olark was there. I like things close around me still. It feels safe. I saw a picture once where I was inside Mommy and she was smiling, so I believed that she was happy that I was coming in. Didn't always feel that way. Some bad things happened that I don't want to talk about, not because I feel scared. I have cried a lot about those and let go of most of what I was holding on when I did that work with Beverly. That was fun because I got to be born in the right way twice, and I got to run away from the men who did that stuff. I really like that. I can talk to you. This talking is what I waited for so long. When Big Mark introduced it, I just scribbled and yelled for a whole bunch of pages. I'd been silent for so long, and Mom punished Greg and me by putting us in the corner and said, be quiet. But she gave me a clock and a book and said I had something to do, and it was confusing. But the corner isn't scary to me. I like crying. I love to feel the tears move down my cheeks. They go down over my chin and drip down my chest until they find my belly button, and I like to keep a pool of them there. Mom told me that crying wasn't so good. She didn't cry, but I couldn't stop doing it, though I had to do it on my own most of the time. I love my dog Patches, but she was always having puppies. So my stepfather, Shep, who was a very mean man, took Patches and left her in the river 10 miles away. There wasn't any water, but she was alone. And do you remember that story, the incredible... Well, Patches was back on my doorstep waiting for me after 6 days. She was a white dog who loved to play with Boomer, the Great Dane, across the street. I still remember throwing rocks at army men on the cliff by my house. I did not like the army men. They were always around my house. My mom worked at the officers' club at Camp Roberts. I think she brought them home like little lost puppies. I don't like them because of what they did. I like school because I got kissed by Linda Marin on the first day of kindergarten. We went to high school together, but that was the only kiss I ever got from her. I felt special because she was really pretty, but not as pretty as Carol Connolly in second grade. We sat next to one another on the train trip, and we held hands, and she moved away right after that. I think I still miss her. Well, thanks for listening to me, and I love to talk. I love Big Mark, and I love me, and you know, I love you, because even though I don't even know who you are. Thanks, buddy. So here's an example of stream of consciousness coming from a child. I would not know all of that information had I ignored the signs. Had I ignored the feelings and the sensations that kept plaguing me, or so it seemed at the time. In doing the work here, you have certain parental elements as well. I'm not going to go through each one, but I'll name them. There's a protective parent, there's an adult, there's a critical parent, and a nurturing parent. We know the critical parent, the one that finds fault with us. This is where the greatest wounding takes place, where we have this part that oversees us, that makes judgments about ourselves, that sort of self-flagellates and finds fault with the things that we do and says they're not going to succeed. And then we have a protective parent, the part of us that goes, you know what? Shut up. That's kind of what it comes down to. And then there's a nurturing parent that will go ahead and take care of us. We know how to self-care. We know how to take care of ourselves, but we just too often don't allow it. So these elements are all existing within us, and please take the time to read these, because it all comes down to us choosing to be doing something called reparenting. Okay, I'm just quickly moving through this here. Okay, so to reparent is to replace misinformation. It involves the multiple dimensions of child and parent, each called upon as necessary to remove the information, lift the veils, reseed the inner knowing, and oversee the reawakening. In this recovered frequency, the child then surrenders to the trusting relationship with the adult parent's self and allows herself to immerse with the beauty and the flow of life. The child has to feel safe. And you do this by making sure she knows that you are there for her, that you will never abandon him, and that you will love her without condition or question. Ever building and reinforcing safety opens the door to taking away the misappropriated responsibilities he took on far beyond his consciousness in years. The child needs to know that his needs will be met, food, shelter, money, water, clothing, and an ever-expanding acceptance of her unique expression of the I am expressing as me. Consistent communication and care must be adhered to allow the release of resistance and the protection of the child's part. And we're going to get back to naming that child in just a flash. When the child knows his needs are met, she'll be willing to let go of control. One by one, beliefs, actions, and patterns, it will open up to re-education, and she will soon see how she did a lot of things to assure her survival, things that honestly were way beyond her years. And he will gladly let go because the burden of responsibility robbed her of his childhood. You are here to give it back. And to reparent, you must open up and maintain channels of two-way communication with the little one. You have to show interest, give direction and love, have fun, play with her, reinforce your continued presence and availability. You must include her in all things you do unless it is inappropriate. Then you let him know what you expect. He wants guidelines and parameters that she can butt up against, but wants to be able to access power and risk, but know that you are there to catch him should she stumble. She wants to be loving and to have a loving, mutually serving relationship with you. In other words, you do everything that you would like to have done for you as a child and more. That's what we're talking about here. Before you, there are four elements of you as the child part. The tendency is to name them all just the name that I have, but they have characteristics about them. When I think of the vulnerable child, the vulnerable little Mark, I want to call him by a name which is something like a really precious name, like Lovey, or even Precious. That name, my mom kept throwing it on me through my adult life, and it used to drive me crazy. It just viscerally irritated me until it didn't. And as a result of the work I did, I realized that Precious in the beginning was important to her, so I allowed it, and then I found out it was something that I wanted to hear all along but kept pushing away, because I didn't feel that. I finally reached a point where I felt precious to myself, and that was an evolutionary process. So, little Precious there as the vulnerable child, and the magical child, goodness, I'm going to call him Whee! And the playful child is, come on! And then the angry child is, shh, shh. Not even a name, just a sound. So what I'm doing here is following the first impulse and giving an identity on one level so that I can have a connection with that unique part of myself. You know, it's interesting that in this process, we're looking at all these different elements of ourselves. And isn't it funny, and I talk about this in the relationship with the body that we may not really get to tonight, but I talk about how, you know, traditional medicine has labeled and made all of those things dysfunctional and bad. You know, somebody's got their mute on. So on the count of three, would you all just speak your name? One, two, three. Okay. All right, so let me get out of this section here. This is a very important point I want to put in. Oh, I'm sorry, I got distracted. We're back naming the child self. You see, my kid just wants to move on, man. He's ready to move. Let's go. Let's go to the next thing. This is exciting. This is fun. So I invite you to go ahead and take a moment and give name. Take the first thing that comes to mind. So first of all, let's do the vulnerable child. Give him or her a name. And if you got paper, write it down, because it's something you're going to come back to. And then now to the magical child, this part of you that really connects with life and the wonder and the imagination that goes on. Give him or her a name. You're actually listening to the suggestion of the child itself, herself, himself. It isn't that you're giving the name. Trust what comes to you as the speaking of that part of you. Then you have the playful child. Let her or him tell you the name. And then finally you have the angry child. Let the name be revealed to you. Ideally, this angry child is not necessarily going to be around for a long time. The angry child's identity is based upon the reservoir of unprocessed frustration, anger, hatred, etc., that are there waiting to be released. As they are released, then the identity of that one is transformed into something very different. He or she just becomes a tender of that garden. In other words, the one who watches over when those feelings come up again to make sure they just move and they release and go out. It's a very, very interesting and organic thing that comes up. Okay, I wanted to make a brief statement about, this section is called Two in Relationship. There's something that occurs in the process of reconnecting with your child self. And what it is that you create the perfect relationship if you pay attention to it and if you feed it and nurture it through your attention and your commitment to reestablishing, we'll call them proper roles for each of you. In culture, we are programmed to believe that what we desire and what we seek and the answer to whatever's going on for us is somewhere out there. You can see Feifel singing right now, yearning for the one who will come to take it all away and everything to work out, and it comes in the form of another human. We are taught that relationship has to have, we're accessing and looking for and yearning for the quote-unquote soulmate. The soulmate idea is really based on frequency, and a frequency of like two notes in a chord, three notes in a chord on a guitar or a piano, they are in relationship with one another, and they create a beautiful frequency, a collective frequency that is harmonious and resonates with itself. The idea of two notes in unison are such that they are so perfectly aligned that they act as one. Honestly, two notes in unison perfectly aligned to sound as one is pretty boring. There's nothing going on there except what sounds like a single note that may be amplified in volume. But if one of those notes is shifted ever so small, like a 0.0003 hertz, which is a measurement in music, a frequency, all of a sudden a modulation begins to appear. And the modulation, the wah, 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 wah that's going in between creates a more expansive and inviting relationship between the two. Relationships that appear to work between humans are one that are fused with differences. And the differences provide the modulation to allow them to have something to work with, to work on, to grow into, to remember, to hold oneself up against, to see the progress I've made in terms of reawakening my capacity for unconditional love. We're taught in through the media mostly, and quite honestly, through television, movies, and music, about the nature of relationship, that we are helpless without the one who's going to take care of us. So it keeps us stilted. It keeps us believing in limitations. I can't live if living is without you. I can't live anymore. Wow, you sing and say that enough times and you're really going to believe it. So this is what we're up against in terms of creating relationship. So to find the perfect relationship that allows us to practice unconditional love, because we are so nurtured and so filled up with being cared for, is quite honestly the one we're looking at tonight, between the adult and the child self. When the adult self, through the parent and the adult, the nurturing parent and the protective parent, begin to support and create a new special safe place for this child self, and the child becomes so safe that he or she relinquishes the hold on the patterns and lets the walls that have surrounded her and kept her in a particular form fall down, then she becomes free, like Marlo Thomas said, free to be me. And in that place, with that trust, with those needs being met, the reciprocal relationship of that outwardly is that you can stand in the presence of another human being and not have needs based on them. You won't be coming from a less than state. You won't have things that need to be filled up. There won't be holes that are yearning to have someone come in and put their finger in so that they can just keep the water from running out, and so you don't have to feel. Those things are all doomed. Those are elements that are doomed. There's no other way to say it. Because even the most perfect relationship between people can be happening, and you may have found your quote-unquote soulmate, and everything is so beautiful and so copacetic and in the flow, and you say goodbye one morning because one of you is going to work, and while you're gone, one of you gets run over by a truck. What then? Then you're back to helpless, the yearning, the searching for completion, and then you're dealing with the grieving of all of that. I tell you that the frontier of creating a relationship with self is the one place where our needs can get met, and then we have the reservoir of balance to be able to be present for someone and actually be unconditionally loving towards them, to allow them to be who they are and not try and steer them into a form that supports my own particular needs and habits. So maybe this underscores the importance of tending this relationship and building it to the point where you know that you are taken care of. Things just won't bother you anymore. Most of the stuff that seemed to be so problematic and irritating pretty much falls to the wayside. Yeah, there's setbacks, but, you know, why not? Let's see how I'm doing with it. I invite you to read through this section. There are suggestions of what you can do to create and support that kind of relationship. Please do that. And let me underscore just an element or two in the inner child and the physical self, and then we're going to actually getting into some of these processes of working with the remaining, say, 20 minutes of our time. As I said before, the physical is the domain of the child's communication until further notice. The physical is where sensations occur. And these sensations are the ways, the tappings on the consciousness of the child saying, I need some attention. Will you pay attention to me? And if I happen to feel it in my belly, the upper belly, then I know the child has power, some power struggles, or perhaps is having to make a decision and is asking for me some assistance of how to deal with a particular challenge or a problem. Or if it's down below my belly button, in the pit down there, I know that the child is scared. But if I attempt to ignore all of those things as irritating sensations, or if it comes as pain, then I'm going to want to medicate away. That's what we're taught to do. So every time we ignore those, what we do is tell the child that they're not worth it. And all that does is reinforce decisions made long ago that we are not worthy, that we have to keep taking classes, we have to keep doing this, and we'll never find what we need, and it feels hopeless. And it's easy to, with that kind of thinking, get depressed. So the idea is that the physical sensations, in whatever form they come in, and then the emotion itself, the emotions and these particular ones that rise up, stimulated by the moments of living, are an effort by that child self to communicate up until now. In relation to the chakras and the emotion or the energy bodies, we actually have one of our energy bodies called the emotional body, and then there's the mental body. Emotions in their raw form and in their actually manipulated form get stuck in the emotional body, thus the name. And for those with the eyes to see it, you can see them as masses that are, you know, in sections and in spots, pulling the energy down and the frequency. And if they're left there long enough, it's like rust in a car on the beach. You live at the ocean where the salt water in the air. Next thing you know, you got a little bit of rust down at the bottom by the wheel well. That's what happened. It kind of eats it away. It eats away the energy body there, and then that will allow other energies of lower frequency and unlike you to start to infiltrate through that place. In other words, the walls are breached. So there's a point in tending one's emotional garden, and it's a reason that we actually have a whole session on emotion coming up, I believe, in the next block. But the physical, the actual chakras that are involved, we've already established the second chakra as the main one. The third chakra, being the power center, is also involved because so often we feel disempowered. We're unable to make decisions and take action. That's a compromise of that chakra. The heart chakra holds the grief of the wounds that we actually went through and the losses that have happened and how we perceive those and how we hold on to. Those will hang in that chakra. The throat chakra is the actual chimney of the second chakra, where the words that are unspoken are the wounds that are held in the second chakra. The throat shuts down, it becomes compromised, and the voice softens and gets holes in it too. Certain frequencies begin to leave. Certain areas are compromised in the sound and the tone of the voice, and you can hear it in certain individuals about what's missing and where they could go to actually begin to augment those and bring them back. The imagination and wonder, the tenets of childhood, the gifts that were given to create relationship with the world on a multidimensional way are compromised in the third eye. And the connection, which is the support that comes through the crown and through the root chakra with the earth, are compromised as well. All of these chakras have impact, and all of these chakras are impacted by not having relationship with the child. And as we choose to open those up, we begin to clear these elements out, and the chakras do their work, and as the energy clears and the relationship begins to expand with this child part of us, we begin to experience probably more vibrant health, a stronger immune system, the release of traumas, et cetera, et cetera. And once again, the gift of all the personal work that was done through the 70s, 80s, and 90s by you and me on the couches of therapists everywhere has raised collectively the vibration enough that we don't have to dig in those realms as much. And for those that have been on the path for a while and have done a lot of work, you don't really have to go there at all. Now it's awareness. The awareness gives permission. Once you've given the awareness and paid attention to an inner calling, The attention itself moves the energy, and it is released in a beautiful process. And again, somebody's, that was perfect. That was the release of some process there. I love it. Okay. We're going on to tools that make a difference. Okay, let me just get to the main one that has been very, very potent and powerful. Well, up till the point, well, it continues to still be, I'll say. And that was a discovery through Lucia of the power of the non-dominant handwriting. Okay, so here's the process. There are several things going on. One is that she discovered that the dominant hand is typically the one that's related to the left brain. And it doesn't have to mean that the right hand, it's always the right hand, because we know that they work opposite. What it means is the one that we give most attention to is the one that is connected on this energetic level to the left side of the brain. Whereas a non-dominant hand, which is the tool of the inner child, as well as the tool of the, if you do automatic writing or anything, or have connection with spirit or do channeling, sometimes a non-dominant hand will become the vehicle that allows spirit to write through you, because it is immediate access to the right side of the brain. So as we look at these two elements, we realize that one is going to be, in a sense, the adult and the overseer of the interaction, and then the child self is then going to, through the development of safety, be willing to begin to express in words, in energy, in emotion, and in vibration what has been held up and locked in and ignored for so long. This is the absolute magnificence of this process, and why in the beginning, when I first accessed, you know, tentatively with my right hand and said, hi, who's there? And then the pencil in my left hand just started moving. And just and the more I allowed it, it just kept scribbling and digging and circles and all kinds of stuff, page after page after page after page. And then after a while, eventually it slowed down. And then out of that movement, there appeared a name. Primitive at first in terms of being able to actually read it, Markalark. And then began the dialogue and the connection of that part of me. So essentially what we're doing here is we're using the dominant hand to ask the questions, to make statements, and then letting the non-dominant hand answer or give information or ask questions too. It's a matter of developing a dialogue between the two, and this gives you the possibility to do that. So we're going to take just a very short time here to introduce the concept, which we've done, and actually invite you, if you have a piece of paper and a pencil or a pen, to do just this. You're going to, well, why not just make a general question about your little child? Take your, well, why not take the vulnerable child? That's the one that carries the most debris. Or if you're feeling in a particularly frisky mood, access the angry child and see what comes up. So what you're going to do is, with your dominant hand, just say, and you got some names a moment ago, so you're going to say, hey, little one, or what did I call my angry child? It's like, so however I spell that out, I say, I'm here for you. What would you like to tell me? Or how are you? Or what's up? Or how are you feeling? Anything you want to share? These are all openings for that little one to do something. And then I put the pencil or the pen in my left hand, and I get out of the way. And it sort of feels like maybe you're doing it yourself, and you want to go, well, I can't read it or whatever, but just get out of the way and let it do what it does. And right now it may do nothing, which to me would indicate that the child just doesn't feel safe enough to do it. So let's take a couple of minutes here and just see what happens. And if the child does respond and you can read it, then use that as your prompt for your next comment or question on your side. And see if you can begin to invite this dialogue to show itself up. So I'll be back in 2 minutes. Okay, about another 30 seconds. I invite you, if you are getting dialogue, just make sure you thank your little one for sharing and say, I'll be back. Not like Arnold would, I'll be back. Don't want to threaten the little one. Just want to create an inviting state and an anticipation about future communication. Okay. So bring that to a conclusion, and I'm just going to offer some more tools for awareness that make a difference, or tools that make a difference in actually creating a relationship with that little one. So another thing that's very potent and powerful, and as I look around my desk, I have a picture of me as a little boy. I'm in one of these god-awful suits that my mother made my brother and I wear. We always looked alike. And we dressed alike, even though we were about a year and a half apart. And I'm sitting there, and below me is this great big old dump truck that I was given for Christmas. It's Christmas time. You can see it was in the 50s, and you saw the tinsel tree in the back, the aluminum tree. This is a black and white photo taken by my real father when he was around for the short time that he was there. And I'm sitting on a like an ottoman, and I am posing. I like that one. There's another one of me, the one I referred to, in my mother's belly, and she's just all brilliant and smiles. I go to that when I doubt that she cared for me. There's one of me in my first bassinet. It was pink because they were expecting a girl, but you can't see it in the black and white photo. And I got one of me here at about maybe 4 or 5 years old when I was in Colorado for a brief time, and it's a birthday party, and from the looks of it, it's my birthday party, and I don't know any of these kids except my brother, who's wearing the same shirt that I have on. And it's my birthday. So I keep these things around because they remind me of the connection with that part of me. What I do is I create a sacred space, and I invite you to consider doing this, is you create a sacred space with mementos of your child. Photos, drawings, anything that you might have that would give you awareness of that part of you, and you create a separate sacred space, like an altar devoted to this energy. You can even put a little pot there, and put not smoking pot, but a pot to put a plant in. You put the plant in or with a seed, and you tend the seed on a daily basis, and it becomes a metaphor for the growing relationship between the two of you. Put it in a place where you can alter it and move it, and I mean not move it, but tend it and keep it tended on a regular basis. And when you do that, you're developing and showing your commitment to having the relationship with that little one. This will serve you in large, large ways. Another thing you can do is just start paying attention. Paying attention to the movement in the inside, to the sensations, the feelings, the recognition that you're being talked to on a regular basis. Pay attention to where emotion shows up in your body and start giving your adult attention, your focused attention, to the places that are calling you. Stop attempting to put them aside and stop ignoring them. And all of this goes far in creating the relationship of safety between you and that child part of you. Start paying attention to children everywhere. And notice what they do, how they act, because there aren't any accidents. Your higher self, your child self in many ways, is orchestrating the things that come into your life to give you the greatest opportunity to remember who you are. And so they're going to stimulate you and push you to have releases and to let go of certain perspectives and belief systems and old wounds. So you're going to see situations often that really impact you emotionally. They are there to give you the opportunity to move and release that stuff, and to open your heart even wider than it's been. We are being, divested of our wounds, and we're being shown a different way of holding energy in ourselves so that we can expand and really truly embrace and enjoy this time. Watching little children is a wonderful way to do that. Now, we don't want you to necessarily do it to the degree that you get put in jail for doing it, but you know what I'm saying. Okay, the point of the relationship is to heal the distance between the two of you by making a safe, supported, nurturing world for your little one. This takes time, commitment, and follow-through. Talk to your child. Bring her along with you wherever you go. Do things. Get things for him. Remember together. Talk to one another about the things that you recall in childhood and gather some art supplies and get into primitive art. Learn together and create together. Get agreement from the family, if necessary, to start including your little one in meals and other events, and go on purposeful excursions with your little one and talk about them. Play a lot. Make sure they are active as possible. Having said that, go ahead and find some of the games you played as a child on eBay. Get them and play them together. I found my second grade lunchbox on eBay. I think it was $1.29 when I was a boy, and it ended up being $40 on eBay. But it was worth it to have it right in front of me on a regular basis. It's a little it's a red one of a farmhouse or a barn, and in it the milk thing is a silo. And this is for 5 years. This was my lunch. I took it in there, and so to have it here is very meaningful. I still have my stuffed animals. I have Brownie and I have Ted. Brownie is a stuffed brown dog, and Ted is a red, white, and blue teddy bear. Both have shown their age. They travel with me on a fairly regular basis, although they're falling apart. Brownie has jumped ship too many times. I left him in a parking lot in Needles, California, and sadly, I didn't even realize it until I was an hour down the road. Fortunately, he was FedExed from the place to me, and I got him on the day I was heading back from Colorado. We have had adventures. But at nighttime, when things are hard, when I forget who I am, I bring these guys out, and we just cuddle. I'm not ashamed to admit it. The more I can be the child's self, and the more that I can do that, the more it reinforces my connection with my boy. And when that happens, he feels safe, and he's willing to let go of these annoying patterns I've held on to for most of my life. These kinds of consistent activities develop trust. She may begin to fill in the blanks of childhood. You may learn about things you never knew. Believe her. Work with the revelations and move to allow the releases of the emotional garbage. Cry together. Populate your house with color and light. Gather and make available stuffed animals and see how he uses them. The point is to nourish the relationship. Let it unfold by showing up. Do things together. Go out for ice cream. Always imagine she is with you. Establish boundaries and give her some structure. Tell her how to handle challenges. Talk about love and light and evolution, remembering, and let her tell you about what the cosmos is like. You always have the opportunity to have this relationship. In the traditional circles, people would be calling you crazy. But look at the result of the people who are calling it crazy in the world that's been built. It is time to move on from that. And creating a relationship with the inner child is one of the primary vehicles that I have found that heals the wounds. It bridges those elements of emptiness. It brings us back to the heart. It allows us to have a deep, connected relationship that nurtures. It gives us a tool to understand what relationship is so that when we are in relationship, we can bring that to the person we are with or the situation we're in. It is the great teacher. It connects me with my essence. I can transcend time with that. My boy and I make journeys to other planets. We do all kinds of fun things. Why not? And having said all of that, I am no poster boy for this because a lot of times I forget that he's even around. And it won't be long when I do that before I get all kinds of little symptomologies that are going, hey, remember me. Don't forget. Let's do something. You said we were gonna, and you lied. I said, well, I didn't lie. I just forgot. Okay, so we're always making up for one another. I'm always making up and apologizing for things that I said I was going to do and didn't do, but they are less and less and less. Daily do a creative journal. Start to dialogue with this little one, and it will pay in dividends. This particular unit here, this session, is filled with information that you can use, so I invite you to go see it. The pictures are very interesting that I put in there. I have music that goes along with it, and then down on the right side, something different just for this one because I had a bunch of songs about my childhood in here and childhood in general. I just included some lyrics, so look at the lyrics and just look at them as poetry. And the poignancy of growing up and the challenges of being growing up in the 50s and 60s, they're pretty unique. Well, probably the ones now are more intense. But okay, thank you so much for being a part of this one tonight. As you know, these things just outgrow themselves, and it's been a privilege to serve and to talk to your inner child self. And I believe you have all the foundation necessary right now to really begin to create and to nurture and maintain a relationship with that one. And she or he will begin to reveal some beautiful and magical things. And I would bet that any kind of symptomologies that are rambling through your life right now or issues are begin to will begin to shift really in a relatively short time. Can't guarantee that, but I do know that the energies of support in these times are mighty powerful, and these are the days of wonder and miracles. So thank you so much for being a part of this, and let's see, next week, that will be session 7 next week, and that'll be the end of the first block. And in that case, we'll take a 2-week hiatus, and those who have signed for the next block, We'll get started in looks like in June, and certainly the invitation is for those who have been a part of this block to join into the next one. As you know, everything is recorded and passed on to you as the recording and as the information as well. So, once again, it's a privilege to serve you. Next Tuesday night, we'll be looking at emotion and the flowing with emotion, which is a beautiful one to create a space on and create a couple weeks off. So I'll stay on the line for any comments or questions. But for all intents and purposes, have a blessed night. And the two of you, parent and child self, adult and child self, have a great night. And I look forward to, let me know how things go with your budding and growing relationship with your child self. I'd love to see pictures of your sacred altar spaces for the child. That would be beautiful to see. Thanks so much for being a part of tonight. We are done now. Questions? Anyone? Once again, you star 6 if you need to ask a question. All right. All the rebellious children are out there. They wanted nothing to do with it. They're already out playing somewhere. I love it. This was a good night. So endless blessings to everyone. Good night.